Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're wrapping up the week with a daily editorial with Dave Erfley talking about a bit of a reversal, more than maybe a bit of a reversal that we're seeing in a wide range of markets. But as always, we're going to focus on the precious metals and the precious metals stocks. Earlier today, gold made a run up to almost 2,500, about 2,450, then reversed, currently a little under 2,400. Silver ran the whole way up to about 10 cents short of $30. Now it's closing in on $28, so quite a reversal there. The stocks also ran higher and now are negative. The ETFs all down about 1.5% right now. Dave, let's start off with a kind of technical note on these markets, simply because, look, we've already talked to a more generalist investor who was noting some technical reversals in a wide range of markets. When it comes to, let's say, GDX, GDXJ, or gold or silver, what are you noting on the charts technically?
Yeah. On the charts, technically, as far as gold is concerned, you know, we had, 17 record high closings. It was like another day, another all-time high for the gold price. It just kept going up and up and up. You know, weakness was being bought really quickly. It tried to pause at around 2350 earlier this week and was short-term extreme overbought. And then that weakness was bought right away. And into this morning, the gold price ran up to, like you said, it was like really close to 2461, which is the first Fibonacci target, because there really is no overhead resistance. So it hit that target and then it reversed sharply. I mean, that was how I expected this move to end. And I gave my subscribers a heads up on that possibly taking place pretty soon. So we had a sharp reversal, it looks like, of about $70 into the COMEX close. And the gold price is right around a little over 2350 again, or right around there. There's support at 2,300, but I think if you see 2,300 loss next week, then you're going to have more nervous longs taking these outsized gains. And I wouldn't be surprised if the 50-day moving average is tested on a correction. And that is around 2,150 right now. And that's also good support where this move really started right into the end of March when we had that technical breakout on a monthly and quarterly basis. So this is all healthy. And the reason why it went up so much this morning, it looked like, was geopolitical. Israel announced that they expect Iran to attack either today or tomorrow. So, you know, when you have that kind of move at the end of a run like this and how extreme overbought it was, it makes sense to have a reversal and to have some profit taking.
Well, Dave, let's also look at silver, the heartbreaker. I mean, it gets up to near 30, 10 cents away. And now it's back down in the low 28s again. I mean, I guess overall it's encouraging that silver has broken through some of those resistance levels at 26, 2650. But how are you reading the action now? Because a lot of people are going to have had that exciting moment where they thought it was going to happen and then had their hopes dashed once again.
Well, that really makes sense too in silver, right? Because we had that initial 2-year resistance broken at 26, right? And then, you know, whenever silver gets moving on in both directions, it really moves. So it started to move really sharply after it broke there above 26 on a weekly basis, and it ran up to 30. But 30 is multi-year resistance, and it's overbought too. So it's natural for silver to come back and from that level and see some profit taking. But so far, it hasn't been as much really, and you're still seeing relative strength in the silver price in relation to gold. I think that gold silver ratio is back down to around 80. And that's that level that we really need to watch. We need to see the gold silver ratio trending lower below 80 to get more excitement in the sector. And it you know, I've been telling my subscribers for a while now that the precious metal bull market really won't get going until we see that move above 30 in the silver price and it holds and it starts to become a floor after being 4-year resistance.
Dave, let's take a look a bit more closely at GDX, GDXJ over the past year. Both are very close at closing at 52-week highs. And one thing I noticed recently is that the rally we saw last year at the start of March through pretty much this exact time is a very similar rally. And we have GDX, GDXJ right back to those levels. However, we have gold, like $500 higher, if not slightly more than that. No, about $500 higher. So as much as we have seen some of these stocks outperform recently, How do you balance out where GDX is pausing compared to last year and where gold is?
Yeah, I mean, and we know the reason for that too, right? I mean, it's all those costs associated with the inflation, the margin compression happening in these miners, along with the stock market continuing to go up and Bitcoin continuing to go up, having, you know, a lot of competition for gold stocks. I mean, gold stocks have been basically ignored, unloved, you know, for the past 4 years. I mean, if you take an even bigger step back, the retail investor left en masse in 2013 and really hasn't returned. You know, we've had, historically, you have these minor bull cycles, right? And they last 2 to 3 years, from 2001 to 2003, and then from 2005 to 2007, and then from 2009 to 2011. And we had huge moves in gold stocks and all those. But after 2011, you know, gold had had this huge 10-year bull run. And once gold lost 1550, that's when the retail investor just left this sector en masse. And like I said, they haven't really returned. I mean, since 2016, we've just had a couple of mini bull markets of 6 months, followed by 4-year bear markets. So it's just frustrated investors in this space, and a lot of them have left. And you could tell that by the volumes associated with what you were just talking about here in GDX and GDXJ, right? You know, even though we've had the same type of move, the volume spike in March of last year was higher than any volume spikes we've had in this move, despite the gold price breaking out of this uber bullish 13-year cup and handle pattern and moving up so far so fast. I mean, the stock market was kind of going up with it. The gold complex started to decouple from the stock market this week somewhat. And we need to see more cracks in the stock market appear, I think, before we see more generalist investors coming into this sector.
Dave, I completely agree that, you know, the general stock market strength has not been a reason for them to rotate into the precious metals. But I'm going to push back a little bit on the margin contraction idea, because if we look back at last year, what caused the rally Corey was talking about, it was the banking crisis that really sent it higher. And that was why it was surging in March and April. Well, their margins for most producers, gold producers, were about 1250 to 1300, and the gold was around 1800. Well, now their margins have gone about $100. So the margins now are 1350 to 1400 for most producers as an average. But gold's at 2300. There is still like a $300 or $400 spread they've added onto their margin. Why are these producers not getting more traction from analysts covering the space and noting it? Do we need to see more proof in the pudding and quarterly results? Because they actually have had margin expansion.
Yeah, I think we do. We do need to see those quarterly results, right? In Q1, we're already starting to see production numbers come out, and the gold price averaged, I think it was 2070 an ounce in Q1. That's about $65, $70, $75 higher than Q4. And also we've had costs kind of level out. So I think you're right. I think once we start to see these numbers come out, I think people are going to get more excited, and you're going to start to see more generalists come into the gold stocks. I mean, if you take a look at fund flows, ETF fund flows, World Gold Council came out with the numbers this week. And after seeing outflows for so long, we finally started to see inflows just in the ETFs. So, you know, if they're just starting to get into the ETFs, I would think that the generalists coming into gold stocks would follow that. But we need to see that trend continue. And for that trend to continue, we need to see what's going to happen after this reversal now. Now, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised to see the 2100, 2150 level tested. Let's see how quick it's tested, and let's see how the stocks react when it is tested.
Yeah, let's also see the gold price go up more, right? Because $200, that's about 10% margin expansion, which is decent as long as there isn't any other costs associated that are rising. But again, let's see it go even higher so that these margins truly explode higher and draw people in. But Dave, look, we talk a lot about mid-tiers and even juniors too, and we all know how cash-strapped these companies have been. There is a bit of a financing window open right here, and a couple million dollars, that unfortunately is more lights on money for a lot of these companies, but that window is open. Even in stocks that you hold, if they do need some money, let's say not this year, but next year, 2 years out, do you like to see them doing small placements now just because money is available?
Absolutely. You know, when the money's available, you take it, especially in a market like this, because it is different this time, right? I mean, ever since I've been in this sector for the past 20 years, money's always been cheap until now. It's not cheap anymore. So it's not as available anymore. And once it's offered, you take it. Absolutely.
Well, Dave, as the junior miner junkie, someone that's been through many cycles, are you making any changes to how you're allocating to different stages of mining stocks in your portfolio? Are you getting maybe out of some of the highest quality and rotating down the food chain of the risk curve? Are you hodling what you have? Are you looking at earlier stage companies? Are you making any changes in your portfolio?
Yes, basically what I'm doing is there's a couple that I got into very early. They're growth-oriented producers, or I inherited it from a takeover, and they're close to reaching my average cost because I got into them so early. And they had to raise money, you know, too early, and their share counts have gone up, and maybe their production profile isn't as attractive anymore. Or it is still attractive, and I'd rather add more leverage with a developer explorer that I like on a watch list because I see more upside. So there's a couple I'm waiting to reach my average cost so I can sell it and then rotate the proceeds into some developer explorers that I have on the watch list that I see more upside in. Because the last thing I want to do is take a loss on something to get into something else. You know, I really don't preach that, and I don't want to practice it either. So since I have so much leverage in so many other companies, so many other developer explorers that have already moved, and some of them have moved quite substantially, I'm not going to take a loss right here. Just, you know, so I could chase something, or if I can, or to get into something that I feel has more upside. I'd rather have the patience to wait until it reaches my cost and then sell it.
So, Dave, when you're looking at some of these charts and some of these mid-tiers, some of these more advanced explorers, they didn't sell off nearly as much over the last 4 years as some of these other companies. And some of them, look, their charts do actually look okay. But you look at some of these smaller companies, some of these, I guess, smaller junior explorers, even some of these producers that have really been sold off, even after a doubling in share price over the last about month and a half. It's hardly a blip on a longer term chart. Are you interested at all in some of these stocks that quite simply really did sell off a lot more than some of the higher quality ones?
Yes, I am. If they still have a really good share structure by managing capital markets correctly while this bear market was taking place, and I like their projects, and I like the management team and the jurisdiction, absolutely. I've got several of them on my watch list that I'd like to get into. But, you know, the last thing you want to do is basically sell something too soon, take a loss on it, and then get into something else, hoping it will go higher. I mean, you want to sell something based on company fundamentals, and you don't want to get into something, end up chasing something with that money based on FOMO.
Well, Dave, another thing to look at, and we love discussing this with you, is mergers and acquisitions in the space. We haven't seen a ton of them lately, but we have seen a few. Like we did see Karora and Westgold merge to become a larger mid-tier Australian producer. I think they're going to start producing around 400,000 ounces a year now. So they're saying it's a 1 + 1 = 3 scenario. And we have seen that Mako took over Gold Source Mines to be able to ramp up their production. You know, obviously the Alamos and Argonaut was the biggest deal lately. Do you think we'll see more of this though, like mergers where the idea is to mass up in scale and get their production up to a point where maybe they start attracting those generalists?
Yes, and it needs to take place, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that. I mean, a lot of these companies, they need to get together with others maybe in the area or that have other synergies and create a larger company with more liquidity. It's the liquidity issue that's a big problem with a lot of these companies because the liquidity is just not there if maybe you only have a single asset and your production's not all that much. And your growth story does needs a kicker. So, you know, these mergers and acquisitions need to continue, absolutely.
Growth, right? We want to see some growth in the sector rather than companies sitting back and just saying, well, higher gold price, look at what that does for our stock, because it does that for everyone's stock. So let's see some growth back to, again, kind of that bull market that had everybody excited, but then the majors all got beat up because, well, they really pursued growth on that one. Dave, any other areas of this market that you are seeing opportunity in that maybe there is still a disconnect, either in terms of individual stocks or certain types of stocks that almost have you scratching your head saying, wow, these just haven't moved yet?
Yeah, some copper juniors. I mean, I'd like to add another copper junior to my portfolio and to have my subscribers have exposure to. But, you know, as far as early stage, it really doesn't make much sense to get into these early stage companies right now when there's so much value out there in developers that have already found something and they're de-risking it and it's high margin and they're in a good jurisdiction and they've done a good job managing capital markets while they're de-risking it and their share price is still depressed. I mean, there's a lot of optionality out there with gold that's already in the ground. So I don't see the reason on taking a flyer on anything super risky like early stage drill plays.
Well, Dave, just to that point about optionality, I was going to ask you about that because we've seen such crazy valuations for ounces in the ground or pounds in the ground, even for copper juniors. But if you just look at the ounces in the ground for the gold and the silver optionality plays, do you think with the metals prices finally getting a boost that people go back, revisit, and run the numbers closer to current metals prices? I mean, nobody runs them at the exact current prices, but they're going to look at, hey, the trend is we're not going to be at $1,700 or $1,600 gold anytime soon. We're in $2,300 gold. Maybe we need to ratchet those up to $1,800 to $1,900 calculations. Silver, same thing. We're not anywhere close to 20 or 22. We're up at 28, just pushing 30 earlier today. So should these calculations be run? Can that help these optionality plays get a re-rating?
Yes, it can, but you know, there's so many things you have to look at. You have to take each one of these companies on a company by company, case by case basis. You have to look at the share structure. You have to look at the company's access to capital. Do they have a strategic partner? You have to look at permitting. That's a big one. How close are they to getting to being fully permitted? Are they going to be able to get it in environmental permit pretty soon, and then everything else will fall into line after that? You know, you have to look at so many different things. And you can't just say, oh, wow, look at all the gold this company has in the ground. I'm going to buy it. I mean, there's so many boxes that you have to check before taking a position in one of these companies.
You have to understand, too, there's a lot more ounces in the ground right now. A lot of exploration has been done. A lot of ounces have been found. We all know not all ounces are the same. And quite frankly, when we just need a bigger market to revalue a lot of these ounces higher, which we have made a lot of progress here. Yes, it's a correction to end the week, but look at where the gold price is. Look at where the silver price has gone. And look at the action in some of these stocks. It's still a small sector, but at least there's some upward momentum here. Now, I'm sure we'll just all watch and see where the market goes, what sort of a correction we need to go through. But hey, overbought is not a bad thing. It's just something that we haven't seen for quite a while, let alone consistently overbought levels. Dave, thank you very much for your time. Great chatting with you. Very interesting to chat on a day like today. We'll try to reconnect next week. I hope you have a great weekend.
Okay, guys, you too. Thanks a lot.